Hello, good afternoon, and welcome, home or away, win or lose, ABW Radio, your place for Arsenal views. I am your host, Chris, and I do love my little ditty. Isn't it wonderful? Yes, trying to be more professional this year, so we're here, we're ready to rock and roll. We are, of course, the original, and we're still the best. Mwahaha. Right, Leicester City nil, Arsenal nil. Fun, fun, fun. I'm joined to discuss this monumental, thrilling stuff. I've got Carl with me. Carl, do I have to start paying you a fee now? Because you are, of course, a movie star.
Do you know what? I was talking to my agent the other day, and he did say that obviously I've got to charge you lot, but we wrap this one off. But furthermore, going forward, we'll have to talk.
It's fine, mate. Charge what you like. I'll just bill Danny. I don't care. Whatever, he can pay it. And if you don't know what we're talking about, Carl, of course, works for the good rail network of London, the Underground of London, and was rather famous in a video recently. So go and have a look at that. It's quite fun. I'm also joined by. It's technically not a debut, but it is kind of a debut because officially joining the ABW Radio team this season is Mr. Drew Thompson. Good afternoon, Drew, or evening, or morning. What is it there? Evening, morning,
It's afternoon,
afternoon.
four. Good afternoon to both of you.
Hello. Thank you for joining the team, Drew. Do we have to pay you a signing on fee as well, or are you happy to go on a free?
Just fried chicken, please.
Fried chicken. How very American of you. Somewhere in North Carolina, Mr. Shredder is sipping a whiskey and nodding
He is.
profusely.
He's applauding.
Right, well, thank you both for joining me. Let's get straight on then, guys. Let's get some initial thoughts then. Carl, we didn't have the pleasure of speaking after last week's game, so are you happy with today? Is it an improvement on what we saw last week? Obviously the score is, but were you a bit happy with the performance?
Yeah, I was actually. I thought we played better. Still, there's a problem with our sort of end product, but I thought our build-up play was really good, and I think that if we had someone on the end of our chances, we would have beaten Leicester today easily, definitely. Defensively, we were really, really solid. There's a few sort of chances that sort of Leicester got in behind, but anything else, I thought we played really, really well. It's just literally the end product that for me was a bit of a problem.
Yeah, well said, well said. And Drew, anything you wanna add to that? Were you more concerned about our sort of lack of firepower, or were you more impressed with how well we defended this week? Because it was a lot better than last week, wasn't it?
I mean, I'm sure we're going to come on to later about the lack of firepower, who we're utilizing through the center forward role. I'm sure we're going to discuss that. But in regards to the defense, I actually was pleased. Our friend Ross mentioned in one of our WhatsApp chats that Holding looked a little bit more assured this weekend, and that might be part and parcel of the fact that Koscielny was starting next to him, and Koscielny did, you could see that maybe he that level headed calmness that he brings, maybe Holding played off that, and that was good because Ross was talking about how last season at Bolton, one of Holding's biggest criticisms was that he would step off the line too quickly, he wouldn't judge play well, but and he just seemed just more self-assured, less exposed this week, and I think having Koscielny back might, everyone can tell you that having Koscielny back will make us that much better at the back. So I was impressed more about that than as Carl said, the end product, which was beyond lacking. So.
Yeah, we'll definitely touch on bits and bobs of the game. I should say just at this stage, afternoon to everybody that has kindly joined us as usual. Some familiar names and a couple of new ones, I think, as well. So I could see a few people working through there. Our good friend Jan, who's there, God bless him, and Dan Cronin and Ear is there. Everything rude, rude, everything. So thank you all for joining us. That's big Stefan as well. Afternoon, Stefan. Right then, so Carl. Lineup-wise, I wrote my very first actually match preview for Goonersphere, a little cheeky plug for that this morning. And I must admit, the lineup I had was different. I had Chambers in the lineup, and I had Elneny and Coquelin unchanged. Threw a bit of a spanner in the works because we saw Xhaka start, and we saw, as Drew mentioned there, Rob Holding getting the nod over Chambers. What did you make of those two decisions overall?
The Chambers Holding one really, really surprised me, like properly, because I honestly thought that Chambers would start. He got his goal last week. He didn't play too badly. And when I saw Holding, I literally, and I tweeted this, and me and Drew had a Twitter conversation. I said I thought this was the end of Chambers, because how does a guy who's literally just come in to the team, and Chambers has been there 3 years, how does he not start over him? hindsight's a wonderful thing, and I thought Rob Holding played brilliantly today, but I would have put Chambers in over Rob Holding.
I thought you were going to say some more then, so he caught me unawares. I agree. I thought Chambers would start. I was quite surprised. And I suppose in theory, oh, there we go. Lorient 2-0 down. Brilliant. I'm surprised. And I suppose in theory, we'll probably discuss Chambers' future in a minute, but it does say quite a lot, or maybe quite a lot less than you may expect him to say about the situation between Holding and Chambers. And yeah, future doesn't look too bright for Mr. Chambers, unless, of course, he's going to go on loan, which again, we'll maybe touch on a bit later on. Drew, from your perspective as well, obviously, again, you know, we covered the lineup there. The Xhaka sort of starting role today, did that surprise you a bit as well, given the fact that he was, you know, apparently not quite ready to start, and Wenger is usually a bit more, he's usually a bit sort of careful about how quickly he introduces players for a tricky away game against players with a lot of pace, which is not necessarily his strongest suit. Were you quite surprised that we left out the industry of Elneny for him today?
Well, I mean, you know how much I've seen of Xhaka over the last, you know, couple of seasons, and I'm not necessarily surprised that he started it, given that Ozil wasn't in the 11, you know, because Rolo comes into that number 10 role that we've seen him play before in previous seasons. So someone in that midfield has to come in and maybe has to deal with, you know, the physical aspect that Leicester can bring. Xhaka is very good in the air, especially defensively as well. The way he control proceedings, and that's what he does best. The fact that Coquelin started next to him is what was necessary, though. I think if the midfield pairing was a little bit different, Xhaka could have been maybe a little bit more exposed, because he's not very good transitioning from offense to defense. He's more of a box-to-box player. He's not a straight-up holding midfielder, so that's why Coquelin never made sense. And I think Xhaka did okay. His positioning was good. His awareness was okay, but he did try to force too many of those penetrating passes that he loved to do at Gladbach, and we have a different system than Gladbach play, so he has to sort of adapt his game to understand that he can't always make those 30, 40-yard penetrating balls that he got away with in the Bundesliga, because just the approach that Gladbach have, we don't play that way. So if he can adapt his game to mold it a little bit more into what we want to do with the ball, I think he'll be fine. And I think he always has to play next to the holding midfield, and I think that combination, I think, did okay today. So for me, I thought that was the right call.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it was surprised me, but overall I thought he was pretty good. So we'll look at the game as a whole. Carl, there isn't a lot to talk about, is there? Let's be perfectly honest. So we'll try and pull out the few small bits of performances individually rather than actual sort of moments as such. What did you make of our world class centre forward Theo Walcott today? I kid, of course, but all jokes aside, he looks a bit different this season. Now, it might just be because he knows full well he's really been poor, let's be honest, for the last few years. Maybe it's because he's looked at the criticism he's received. Maybe it's just purely because he knows there's no one else and this is his chance to take. But since the start of the season, I have been impressed in spells with his desire and his attitude, typified, in fact, by that run back towards the end of the game where he sprinted sort of 70, 80 yards to win the ball back. He still went missing at times. Let's not get twisted here. But what do you make of his performance and overall the two games? Do you think he's starting to maybe be the player that we might have hoped he might become?
No. I don't. I just think that as a footballer, he's not at the level that we need. We need him to be probably at least five or six steps beyond where he is now. He just the basic things I think he does wrong. I mean, there was a chance where he sort of broke free and he had Bellerin and someone else to the left of him, and he chose to shoot. And Giroud, wasn't it? And I think to myself, little things like that, like people always talk about he hasn't got a footballing brain, and sometimes you can't help but sort of agree with them. He hasn't got a footballing brain. Like, people always say, oh, when he hasn't got time to think, that's when he does best, his best work. That should tell you everything about Theo Walcott, that he hasn't got a footballing brain. When he doesn't need to think, he'll do things well. I do like what you said about the tracking back. I thought that was brilliant, because even I applaud that, and I thought, wow, is that Theo? Well done. Like, I thought that was brilliant what he'd done. But for me, for when you can sort of name the little things that he'd done in the game, that just means he didn't do enough. If you can sort of name everything that he'd done in the game, he obviously didn't do enough, but he's trying. I mean, you can't fault him for effort. He is trying, but for me, it's just not enough. Not enough for someone who earns £140,000. I mean, his wages shouldn't have enough to do with it, but if you earn £140,000, you need to play better than you are, than he is at the moment.
Yeah, it's hard not to disagree with that. And I saw the chat box explode when I said had some great moments today. I stand by that. I did think he had some good moments today. He also had the usual Theo Walcott moments. Don't get me wrong, I'm not going to tell you all that I think he's going to be a 30 goal a season wide forward, because he's not. But I like to try and pick out some positives, and credit where credit's due. You know, everyone said last season he went missing in games. He did. He still is to a degree. But everyone also said last season he never tracks back. And Wenger himself said he doesn't play him on that right midfield role because he doesn't work defensively hard enough. Well, in two games, he's showing that he can do that. So, you know, credit where credit's due. He's trying. But the football brain thing, I do agree, Carl. I think it's hard to... I don't think you can coach that from my point of view. Drew, have a little say on Walcott, and then we'll move on to Alexis.
No, I mean, someone just summed it up best in the chat box, saying if you're looking into Walcott's performances and trying to pick out the moments where he contributed on the defensive side of the ball, then you're clutching at straws, and that's part of the problem. You feel like whenever Walcott performs in a match, you're almost lucky to break even with him between the positive aspects of his performance and all the negatives that always happen. And I feel like that's not what you want from a right-sided player from a club who have had some brilliant right-sided players in its history. And I feel like he doesn't have a footballing brain. He makes so many poor decisions when he's on the ball, what runs to make when he's off the ball. We just have to be doing better than that. And I think there are players already at the club who are a little bit better than him already in that regard. And I think that's also why a lot of people want us to go and shop for an actual right-sided player. You know, I think some people want Ox to get more time, Campbell, who's now checked out on loan, and people are disappointed at that. And both those players, I think, are a little bit better intellectually than Walcott is. So, I mean, if we're going to loan out Campbell, and we don't know what's going to happen with, Wobi when he comes back, and who knows the role Ox is going to play, because Wenger sees him as a central player, but he's also using him on the left, but maybe he can play right. But, so you just have to ask the question, why is Walcott still even at this club? I feel like it's one of those things where Wenger is refusing to admit defeat and the fact that the Walcott project failed 5 years ago and it's still failing now. I think that's a big issue. I don't think he's... No amount of defensive covering, tracking back that he can do, the odd times that he does, for me, is going to be enough of a reason to continue seeing him start at the club, for me, just personally.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Fair comment. Just very quickly on Joel Campbell. I'm disappointed that he's going. I'm not surprised. I think it's clear that for whatever reason, Arsene Wenger doesn't rate the lad, and that's his prerogative. That's his choice. We don't see him in training. There's obviously something not right there. I did chuckle at someone who I'll remain nameless. Was tweeting last night saying he offers nothing but runs around a lot. I do wonder what some people watch football-wise, but still, that's another story for a rainy day. Drew, just transitioning on to Alexis Sanchez. For me, I love Alexis. His work rate's fantastic. He's a great personality. He never stops trying. Attitude on the whole, other than when he gets frustrated at himself, is always spot on. But for me, he's just not a centre forward, and I don't think he will be as long as he's got a hole in his ass. Do you agree?
I've struggled to find words to convey my frustrations in this regard. Okay. People will want to cite that, his time at Udinese, sometimes he played off the shoulder of Antonio Di Natale, and that might be true. He also plays in the two-man system up front for Chile. That also is true. At Barca, he played in that false nine role in the lone space through the middle. That also is true. But the fact is, though, we do not play a tactical system that allows Sanchez to succeed as a lone center forward. He needs to be running off someone who can knock the ball down for him and hit him with some of those diagonal runs, or in a mobile two-front system that Chile have that they've perfected to maximize the fact that they do not have good strikers and they've had to use him there because he's their best possible attacking option through the middle. At Barca, well, Barca do possess the ball. They love that slow, methodical build and play, keeping possession. That's true. We do the same thing. But the problem is Barca are also capable of flicking a switch and turning into quick, incisive, direct football where they break down teams immediately. We don't do that. That's the reason why he won't work as a center forward at this club. It just won't happen. We're not quick enough anymore tactically like we used to be in years gone by where we're direct. If we had that counterattacking system we all miss from years ago, he might actually work as a center forward. In this current system, it'll never happen. And for me, it's just wasting it. I feel like if Giroud was fit enough to be on the bench, Giroud could have started today. We had no central focal point for the attack today, and it showed. And how many times did we see Sanchez chucking himself out to the left-hand side to get space to operate because he wasn't getting space through the middle? That just shows you, he identified himself that, you know what, I'm not working here. I've got to go elsewhere where I'm more comfortable, where I'll see maybe a bit more of the ball, where I can be direct, run at people like I like to. Every part of him playing center forward is exactly the opposite of what his game is molded for. So it's a complete waste for me.
Yeah, well said. Well said. And greetings to our illustrious leader. Danny is in the chat. Hello, Danny, you cheeky monkey. Just before we move on, just a moment for Toto Di Natale. Oh, what a legend. Thank you for bringing him up, Drew. There's always room for a Toto reference. Right, Carl, let's go on to some of the positives today. Lauren Koscielny. Now, before I talk about his performance today, just a very mini rant. Robbie Savage, you, sir, are a fuckwit. Glenn Hoddle, rhymes, see, you are also a fuckwit. Reason I say this is because on BT Sport, they kept banging on and banging on and banging on about how a player should tell a manager that he wants to play. This is not 1987, chaps. Sorry, that isn't how it works, all right? Well, and I'm sick and tired of people saying, oh, well, Man United had Pogba, and he played for fun, so why isn't Koscielny playing? Look, we raced players back last season. It bit us in the arse, okay? Could Koscielny have played last week, conceivably? Possibly. Yes, he could have done. But had he played and got cropped, everybody would have been off for one, like they have been this week with regards to Ramsey. So those two commentators can just do one, as far as I'm concerned. However, Carl, today I thought Lauren Koscielny was absolutely flawless. Everything he did, his reading of the game, his positioning, his tackling, his leadership, which is something I, you know, people have often questioned. You could see him talking the whole game. Do you think in the absence of Per Mertesacker, this is his opportunity to really be the captain that we've been missing for a number of years?
I think he should have been the captain anyway, because let's face it, I don't think Per Mertesacker has more than this season left in him. I don't understand. For me, it's almost like Arsenal think that the captaincy is worth nothing because they give it. I mean, the fact that Theo Walker had it for one game just should tell you everything. But Lauren Koscielny should be our captain, not Mertesacker, because I don't think Mertesacker will get a new deal beyond this season. But moving on, he was absolutely brilliant today. Everything you want a defender to do in a game, he did it today. He was absolutely brilliant. He was just everything you wanted. He is top three defenders in the world. He's got to be. He is. He's just absolutely brilliant. And, you know, you could tell he was talking to Rob, holding next to him, telling him when to go forward, when to come back. You know, he was talking to Monreal as well, talking to Coquelin. He was just brilliant today. I thought he held Vardy and Mahrez sort of at bay today. He made some brilliant last-ditch challenges. He was very, very good today, and I think today it sort of showed that we missed him in the Liverpool game, definitely, and it showed that he is top three in the world.
I would agree, and I think that it's all subjective, of course, and you know, a lot of people will sort of say that, you know, I think everybody always looks at it and goes, oh, if you say a player is one of the top in the world, I think people always go, oh no, that's a load of rubbish, you know, but when you think about it, there aren't many centre-backs that you can honestly say are world-class, are there? Let's be honest, we've been looking for one for 7-8 years. So I would completely agree. As right now, he's right up there. And he has his faults, of course. Well, so does Gerard Piqué and Sergio Ramos and Bonucci and all those others. They all have faults. So, I agree with you. Drew, did you want to have a word on Koscielny? Maybe just have a little word on Rob Holding as well today, because he got the nod, and I thought he grew into the game the longer it went. I think it was the one time towards the end where Vardy got clear of him. Other than that, I thought Vardy looked, well, to be honest, piss poor today.
Well, I mean, I think I touched on it before, and Carl just expounded on it just now. I feel like Koscielny was brilliant, and Holding played off of that as well. And you can see the leadership coming through from Koscielny. I think that's what we really need. Koscielny is that sort of level-headed. He does lead by example as well, but he definitely sort of told Holding to hold a certain line, and then Koscielny would sweep up behind him if he did get beaten. I think the partnership worked well. Like I said before, you know, Ross said that criticism of Holding last season at Bolton was that he couldn't hold the line very well. Sometimes he would step when he shouldn't, and then he wouldn't step when he shouldn't. So the fact that Koscielny was there to sort of guide him in what could have been a tougher match, but like you said, you know, Vardy and Mahrez were kind of offbeat today, but I thought he did do well. I think that can be built upon moving forward. I think off the strength of the performance, you have to say that Holding might be ahead of Chambers in selection now, rightfully so, based off the performance. But I still have my concerns, simply because, you know, and Carl mentioned before the debate him and I had pre-match, that I was saying that I think Holding got the nod because, you know, Chambers, while he's been at the team longer, Holding's been getting more regular football the last year. Despite it was at Bolton, they got relegated in the championship, Holding's still been playing regular football. Chambers hasn't, so it's tough to maybe see why Chambers would start over Holding just off the back of that. And now the performance at the Holding sort of nailed it down that he should be selected ahead of that just because he seems to work better with Koscielny and have a little bit better understanding than maybe you'd see with Chambers in recent seasons. So, no, I thought they both worked well, and I thought that is maybe one of the only actual real positives that personally I'll take away from today.
Yeah, it is hard to find positives in such a bit of a poor game. Let's be perfectly honest, it's hard to polish a turd, so to speak. Just come back to you, Carl, with regards to sort of the midfield options. It's great to see Santi Cazorla back fit again and in the side, but in a really weird way, we signed him, of course, as a sort of a wide creative playmaker / number 10 inside playmaker. I actually think we miss him at the base of that defensive sort of area next to a Cockle, and that partnership worked really well. Myself and Dom have spoken about partnerships for a while, particularly in centre midfield and centre defence, and I just wonder if we're maybe missing a trick there, because when we've got that creativity from deep, it provides the platform to spring counters, whereas when Sandy's in the 10, he tends to sort of slow things down. Did you agree with that?
Yeah, it's hard to... I know people say put players on a football pitch, they should be able to play anywhere. But when you've been playing almost two seasons as a deep lying sort of midfielder, then you get asked to change your position and go further forward. Of course it's hard, and you don't get used to sort of certain things because you know that you're almost like the last line of attack. So I think he kind of messes up a player's head just a little bit. He's used to sort of getting the ball from the defenders, turning, and then picking out a pass. What he was doing today was getting the ball, turning, and there was no one in front of him. You know, Alexis was on the left, Fia was on the right, there was no one ahead of him. So it almost came to the fact that every time he got the ball, he had to turn backwards and pass the ball backwards. And that's what the problem was today, I think, with Cazorla. If he was playing in his normal position, as in that, just a bit further back, I think he would have put a better influence on the game. Personally, myself.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So it's great to have him back, but I just wonder. Equally, of course, we could have played him in that role, and we could have got murdered on the counter attack. So it's hard to say which side of the argument you fall on. And final player I want to look at today, Drew, was Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who, you know, he's looked good in pre-season. He's looked sharp. He did last season, of course, but then tailed off. Staying injury free is obviously vital for him. Didn't think it was his best game today, but he, again, his work rate's good, and something I really liked about today about him was that he looked genuinely disappointed when he came off. And I know that sounds like a really trivial thing to say, but that to me is a big sign that he really wants to be playing football.
Yeah, I think he almost deserves a chance to be playing football. You know, when everyone in the side is fit, and when you look at the first team that we do have, now that Campbell is out on loan, you have to think that this could be a season where Ox can actually, if he stays fit, which has been one of his biggest issues throughout the course of his career, his fitness has never been great. If he stays fit, healthy, in good shape, there's no reason why he cannot nail down a spot on the right side of midfield. you know, Walcott's doing himself no favors in the argument that he should be playing right side or center forward. Campbell's out on loan. We all know that Serge Gnabry does have the ability to potentially succeed, but, you know, Wenger's been chucking out on loan. We haven't really used him well. Iwobi's injured. We don't know what's going to happen with Jeff. So I think this is his season where, if he stays fit, you know, he can sort of build on one performance after another. If he gets a run of games and he gets into some sort of form, I think you can actually see a better player that maybe we've seen little bright spots of him over the course of his career that you see maybe sometimes for England, sometimes for us as well. I think he has what Walcott doesn't. He's a bit bigger physically. He's got his pace is just as good. He's better on the ball. He's not afraid to take people on. He's better at that than Walcott as well. His decision making isn't great. Sometimes he tries to beat someone on the ball when he shouldn't. Sometimes he passes when he shouldn't, and that comes over time. But that also comes in match scenarios when he has to play. It's all well and good when you do it in training, but training isn't matches. And the more matches he plays, the more first team minutes he gets, those decisions will come. So it's all about just getting that experience. I think if he gets that, I think you could see a better player, but a little bit better from him today, and maybe he can build on that going forward.
Yeah, agree. Just while I've got you there, for those of you that, or for those people watching this that aren't aware of your good self, Drew, you follow the Bundesliga and German players very closely. What do you make of Serge Gnabry coming back? Because when it was first announced that he was going to the Olympic squad, I thought, great, it gives him a chance to play. He's gone out there and played, and by all accounts, been bloody good. I've only seen clips of, to be honest, I'd rather watch paint dry than the Olympics. But he's been good out there. He's a very good report. And Wenger said he will be coming back. The talk was he'd go on loan, but with Joel Campbell seemingly inevitably now going on loan, do you think he'll be considered as part of the first team squad now? And if he is, what do you think he'll bring to the side moving forward?
I think he has to. And as you say, you know, Campbell out on loan now. Iwobi's hurt. So the only wide players we have available at the moment are, you know, Sanchez when he comes back when Giroud's fit to play center forward and Walcott and Ox. You know, you can't really say Jeff is ready yet. Just based off the form that he's been playing for Germany in the Olympics, and he has been absolutely brilliant for them, I think it could work. The only problem is, and Danny touched on this a little bit on the ABW podcast, the most recent one, Gnabry isn't actually a right-sided player. How we've used him, he's actually a left-sided player who tucks in on his right foot. Very, very similar to Marco Reus in that regard. And I think that's where the issue's going to fall in, because his strengths are cutting in diagonally on his right foot, not staying out wide right and whipping in crosses. That's not what his game's about. You know, he can provide goals from a wide side, so then what do you do with Sanchez? Sanchez's best role is also playing on the left, tucking in on his right foot, so then you have that bit of an issue. And based off of seniority and ability, you would say that has to go to Sanchez, so you might see Gnabry on the right-hand side, who is not as effective. That's for me, is the problem. So then we're going to have a bit of a selection issue. But if he plays sort of second fill to Sanchez, gets games when he can, helps rotate the squad, plays on the left-hand side when Sanchez inevitably is going to need a rest because he's relied on too often, I think you'll see a better performance out of him. He's always had the ability, no matter how few minutes he's gotten, no matter what injuries he's dealt with, the German national system holds him in such high regard that they keep selecting him for the under-21s, for the Olympics, regardless of a lack of minutes. It's the faith that they have in him and his ability should show that maybe we should have that same stuff. So.
Oh, yeah, I think Lazy Python just put in the chat there, Gnabry will be like a new signing. In a weird way, he kind of will. It's kind of it's funny how football works, but sometimes when a player comes back you haven't seen for a while, they can be breath of fresh air and a good talent. And he was good before he got the injury. He was very good, and that loan to West Bromwich Pulis was not good for his career. But you know, hopefully he comes back and makes an impact, because that's all we want to. Well, that's all we really want, isn't it? To improve the side. Carl, just another player I want to pick up on very briefly from the substitutes wise. Can't really comment on Mesut Ozil, and his hair looks lovely. And Giroud, did what Giroud does for sort of 10 minutes. You know, he held the ball up well, and you know, he didn't have a lot of time to impose himself on the game. But I thought Jack Wilshere looked sharp and looked good. And watching him today sort of reminded me about how he kind of first broke into the side. You know, that ability to go in behind, the ability to sort of slide those intricate passes around, and just his overall movement. He's a quick-footed player, almost like Santi is. Do you think he's sort of making a case that if fit, which I know is a big if, he could be, you know, in for a really stellar season if he gets the minutes?
Again, if fit, it's one of those things. If he stays fit, he would be a brilliant player. You know, the fact that he plays maybe 30% of the season, for me, it's not good enough. And you're hoping that he can have a run of games, not just play two games and then out for 2 months. I think the main focus for Jack Wilshere needs to be for him to stay fit. Once he stays fit, then you can talk about how good he can be, because he was, when he came on, I personally think he changed the game when he sort of came on. I know we talk about Mesut Ozil and he played brilliantly, sort of he's spraying the ball about, but Jack Wilshere for me is what we need, to someone get the ball from deep and just run, turn and run, and we don't really have that. He's one of the very few players in the squad that sort of will do that, just get the ball and turn and run. But again, it's the fitness thing, because every time he has a challenge or every time he goes down, you think the worst. You just think to yourself, oh gosh, what now? And when he gets up, you're like, oh, thank God. But seriously, it's if he can stay fit, he honestly will, I think, can be a game changer. One of them people who can get the ball and sort of just change the whole aspect of the game and put a little, just a little more, I don't know, sort of a prep in the people's steps.
I completely agree. I did think he changed the game. Is right. I do think he was really, really good when he sort of came in, and just for that last, in a weird way, I'd have liked to have seen him for maybe an extra 5-10 minutes more than he did. But yeah, unfortunately, it's one of those things. I suppose you don't want to just race him in, do you, and get injured again. So no, it's good to see. But let's hope that he can actually stay fit. It's a word for Leicester, Drew, in the interest of balance. Don't want to spend too much time on the opposition, but they didn't really impress me much, to be honest. I didn't think Mahrez was busy, and he looked positive when he got the ball, but he didn't really do anything that made me sort of, in fact, if anything, his performance almost made me go, is that why we were reluctant to pay 50 odd million quid for him? Equally, in a better side, he'd probably be better. Vardy, I thought, again, looked very rusty. And the guy cannot tackle. My God, he's a narky little twat, isn't he? I'm quite glad we didn't sign him, actually, because it would have been really hard to like him, although I suppose I would have done if he'd have been in our colours. But what did you make of them? Do you think there's any chance they can be a challenge of the season, or to you, are they still mid-table fodder?
I mean, it's two matches in, but neither of their performances, you know, away at Hull, you know, home to us today, neither of them have been impressive, and I think that the loss of Conte is still evident. You know, I thought Mendy came in and actually did a much better job than King did, on match day one. I think that much is very, very true. And I think Mendy is more of a player, more in the mold of Conte than King is. And I thought that showed, and that was a positive for them until he came off injured. I thought Mahrez was positive, as you say. I thought Vardy wasn't very good. But I think the issue with Leicester is that last season they relied so much on being able to counterattack, but also they relied a lot on creativity from wider areas. The problem is they lack a real creative force centrally. I think that is the biggest thing. They lack a real ability to transition from when they win the ball back to get to a player who can make that right pass. Drinkwater is very good at winning the ball back. Mendy is good at winning the ball back. Conte was great at winning the ball back. And they're all good with making those short passes to somebody. But neither of them, with their current options, are able to really pick the right pass routinely to unlock a defense, to, you know, maybe get it to the right player who can then make the extra pass, you know, the assist beyond the assist that some people talk about. I think that, for them, the real strong transition game, I think that's going to come back to hurt them this season more than anything. I think that's something that they maybe have to target before the window closes, because they do have the money to do it. We'll see how Ranieri assesses that, but I think that's going to be their biggest issue this season, for me personally. I thought at the back, I thought they were still good. They gave up a lot of chances, but they defended strong when they had to. I thought Schmeichel was excellent, as usual, but there's a bit worried that they don't create enough genuine chances that doesn't involve a through ball to Mahrez, I'm sorry, to Vardy or Mahrez beating a player or two and creating space for himself.
Yeah, agreed. And our friend, Drew, you'll know this name, Janzev Shaheen. Hello, Janzev. Leicester should sign
Christ,
Marley.
He did.
He's got such a thing for Marley.
He started already.
Yeah. He stayed at Doodah, didn't he, in the end?
He stayed at Mainz, yeah.
Mainz, yeah. Yeah, wonder if he'll stay the whole window. I have my suspicions on that one, but yes, hello to Janzev. Carl, just in the interest of balance on our rivals as well, Chelsea They've played two. They finished with 11 men when they shouldn't, two, and they've won two. Diego Costa is a massive bell end, and he's a cheat. He should have been sent off in the first game, and apparently should have been sent off today for, I believe he was on a yellow and then wasn't booked for diving. So Chelsea got the victory there. Also, Manchester United's little shout out to all those people that said Zlatan wouldn't succeed in the Premier League. Afternoon. and then we saw Liverpool, who, of course, Jurgen Klopp, the genius. Yeah, that lasted a week. Good stuff. They lost to Burnley. And Manchester City, well, basically tore Stoke a new one. So what do you make of our, you know, in inverted commas, rivals? Because some people don't even think we're in the title race. But if you consider that we are, what have you made of our rivals' starts the season so far?
Expected. Everything was expected. You expected City to do well. I did. I thought Pep would come in and get them playing, which he has. Mourinho is a knob, but at the end of the day, he's a winner. He is a natural winner. And he would come in and get Man United playing, which he has, and he's done well. Liverpool, I said last week when I sort of popped in the chat that I thought they played well, but at the end of the day, we made them look better than they were. And I gave them full credit. I thought they were very good, but obviously Liverpool will always be Liverpool. The bubble is sort of obviously, I wouldn't say burst, I'm not going to say burst, but you got to give credit to Burnley. Obviously Burnley have played well today as well. Chelsea are my dark horses for the title, just because they've got no European football, one game a week, maximum recovery time. I just think they'll do well. And going back on Diego Costa, we can't really talk because Coquelin should have been sent off today, personally. But at the end of the day, he does that, he gets away with it, and he scores a winning goal. Two tears in the bucket. At the end of the day, they've got away with it, and they've got a win. I remember saying in our WhatsApp group, like, everyone was like, oh, Chelsea are 1-0 down, and I said, and afterwards I said, don't laugh, it's too early. Like, this is just typical Chelsea. You just sort of knew once they got this first goal, they were going to get the second goal. And as much of a cheater and as Diego Costa is, he's a winner. And he will get in your face and he will annoy you. And then he will annoy you even more by going to score the winning goal. So what can you say? Just, we don't need to worry about anyone else. We need to worry about Arsenal. We need to worry about how we play against these teams. We need to worry about, we get onto this, who we're going to bring in. We got a draw against the champions of England. You know, even if though it's Leicester, no matter how you may think of it, they are the champions of the Premier League and we got a draw against them. We go into our next game and we just need to play better. We need to win. We need to get some points on the board. You know, we're 5 points off the leaders, and 5 points is a big old gap. And I know it's only two games into the season and a lot of things can happen, but we still have to make up 5 points on our rivals, and that's going to be very, very hard for us to do.
Yeah, agreed. And good point on the Coquelin thing. I have to confess, he probably should have got today. But that said, and probably the penalty, I think maybe the Bellerin foul was potentially a penalty as well. You win some, you lose some. And yeah, I agree on Costa. I mean, you know, the guy is an odious twat. But unfortunately, as you say, he's getting away with it. Hopefully it won't be for... These things come in three, so hopefully on the third time he'll end up smashed up and in bits somewhere, preferably Madrid. This is a little sidebar for you. I'm watching Juventus and all their money and all their new players play Fiorentina. Do either of you remember a player who played in Italy called Enrico Chiesa? Do you remember that name?
Absolutely.
His son, 18 years of age, starting for Fiorentina tonight, Federico Chiesa.
That's fantastic.
I feel so old. Seriously. And Giorgi Hagi's son also plays for Fiorentina.
Mm-hmm. He's actually pretty decent.
There you go. Sorry, I couldn't resist just getting that little reference in. Back to Arsenal. So we've got about 20 minutes to go. So before we open the phone lines, I didn't quite mean it quite like that, but before we open the question lines, I should say, I just want to touch on the transfer window, which of course everybody likes to talk Chris. About. I know. Sorry, mate. It's what people want to hear. You know, yeah. I don't. Yeah. I just want to get your views, both of you, really, on what you think we still need to do, what you think we will do, and maybe just add anything you want to add with regards to the current situation. I'm beyond the stage of losing my marbles now. I had a little meltdown briefly to myself the other morning, but I'm cool now. I'm kind of accepting what it is. Drew, what's your kind of thoughts on how things are and what do you think's going to happen? What do you think's going to happen?
I mean, I know I abundantly made my opinions clear in the WhatsApp group when I gave up I put a list of 50 players that have been of transfers from the top five leagues in Europe, and 90% of those players are ones we could have easily afforded to get. So personally, for me, I'm absolutely sick and tired of the excuses that, you know, we can't compete, you know, the wages are ridiculous, all of these things. For me, we're such a financial powerhouse in world football now. There's no reason why we can't rock up and spend money. And I'm not saying we should have gone out and spent £90 million on Paul Pogba, absolutely not. But take the Lacazette thing, for example. He's got you've been to this. I'm bringing up Lacazette. That's how it works. The man's got, what, 54 league goals in the last two seasons, plus the first two Ligue 1 matches, correct?
Just before you say that, let's not forget, Drew, French league is shit. Carry on.
Don't start. Because I'll retort with the fact that Giroud had one good season for Montpellier, but we had no issue spending money on Giroud, did we not? So clearly, it has nothing to do with the French league. Lacazette is he's a finisher, and that's what we need more than anything is a finisher. You know, and he's also he can be adapted to play other roles. He plays wide right for Lyon all the time. You know, he comes wide left as well. He can even play behind the striker as a second striker. So if you do a deal like Lacazette and Shorjan Mustafi for a combined $100 million, that's $10 million less than Paul Pogba, addressing two issues that we have in the squad. Why is that poor business? Why is it taking us weeks, months to get things done? It took us 4 weeks to get the deal done for Rob Holding, and that was chump change. So for me, I just don't quite understand what the issues with our transfer policy. I just don't get it. And I'm not saying we should be brash and just start to buy anybody and all that kind of thing, but you know, the players, I'm sorry, the players are available, and I don't want to rattle off names off this list because anyone can just go on any, you know, transfer website, go to transfer market, look at all the transfers that have happened. There are players here that we could have easily gotten our business done early, address the squad issues, get strength and depth. You know, the fact of the matter is all our rivals are spending to improve because, you know, they understand that's the way of football. That's how it works now. United went up and got Hendrik Mkhitaryan that we should have, personally, I think we should have gotten in the first place. But they went and got him. They brought in Ibrahimovic. They brought in Pogba. You know, Chelsea are doing business. City are doing business. You know, City are doing actually a lot of smart business for me. It just boggles my mind that we just aren't doing what we need to do. And I'm just, personally, I'm just so fucking tired of the excuses. Excuse the French. But I just cannot stand it any longer.
Yeah, I think that's a view shared by many, Joe. I think you've got every right to feel that way. Just before I ask yourself, Carla, I do just want to slightly defend. Not that he needs it, because he's big enough.
No, don't waste your breath. Don't bother defending it.
No, not the policy. No. I'm going to defend our good pal, Mr. Jeff Arsenal here, because he got a lot of heat on this week's podcast for saying that Welbeck was better than Lacazette. Now, Jeff is a man who does many things in life. One of the things that Jeff doesn't do is, unlike me, he doesn't watch a lot of French football. And if you listen to the podcast, he clearly says he hasn't seen enough to judge. He just thinks, in his opinion, Lacazette doesn't improve us. So I happen to disagree with that. I know a lot of people also do. But to defend Jeff, at no point did he say he wasn't good enough or that he's crap or any of this. He just said that, you know, he thinks Welbeck would do a better job. And I understand what he's saying. So, you know, it is all opinions. So a little tip of the hat to Jeff there. Carl, what do you sort of think of the situation? I mean, are you still confidence is the wrong word. Do you still have any belief that something or some things will get done before the end of the window?
No, I said this. I don't think we'll sign anyone. I don't know why. I just something in the pit of my stomach is saying that we won't sign anyone. For me, Arsene Wenger said that the European market is crazy at the moment. There seems to be a premium when it comes to English clubs, and we have to pay more than anyone else. Okay, why is it that Arsenal Football Club pay the highest ticket prices in Europe? Why is it we have the highest season ticket prices in Europe, the highest match day prices in Europe? you know, it's okay for the fans to pay over the odds, but not okay for the club to pay over the odds for a player. I genuinely, and when he says things like that, I get frustrated. I get heated, like proper frustrated. And I shouldn't. Why should I get frustrated? But at the end of the day, it's my money that I'm buying. I bought two shirts. I bought the home shirt and the away shirt this year. I'm going to go to multiple games this year, but I'm going to have to pay over the odds for those games just because it's a premium that Arsenal have. At the end of the day, they've got a niche in the market because they can put the price up as high as they want. I'm still going to go because I love my football club. I absolutely adore my football club, and I'm going to go and watch them. But at the end of the day, he cannot say that it's okay. It's not okay for Arsenal to pay over the odds for a player, but it's okay for the fans to play much more than it is for a season ticket to go to Man United, much more for a season ticket than it is to go to Barcelona or Bayern Munich. I'm sure that the highest match day ticket is the price of almost the lowest season ticket at Bayern Munich, if I'm not mistaken. Now, what kind of nonsense is that? Like, for me, people are saying, don't spend the money. It's not your money. Like, go and spend the money. Like, I don't understand. If we can go and pay £60-70 to go to one game, why can't they just spend the money and go and get a player? And it's not the fact that he can't find any players, because if it's Arsene Wenger, he has a brilliant scouting network. He knows so much of European football. Go and spend the money. And we're going to talk about, like I said, if the I'm sure that Leon Chairman has said there are some prices that you cannot ignore. For me, that is a green light to say, you've been high enough, you're going to get him. I don't understand why we just don't say, £50 million, here you go.
We have all the 50 quid, that's the problem.
I know, but why don't you just say 50 million? And then if they don't want to pay all up front, you can pay in add-ons and like that will never get done. Like, you can say, oh yeah, if we win the Champions League, we'll give you 20 million. We're never going to win the Champions League, come on. But say that in the negotiation. We don't have to pay the money up front. I think people get sort of confused about how these deals are done. No one ever pays the whole transfer fee up front. It's all done in add-ons and, oh, if this happens, we'll get you this. If this player does this, we'll give you that. And like, I don't understand why it's okay for almost every single other club in European football to get the deals done like that. I know we shouldn't compare it, but Everton lost John Stones and replaced him with Ashley Williams within 48 hours. Why is it that we can't do this? What is it?
Well, here's the thing, but
that can't happen.
But maybe you should compare, because wouldn't that be logical in how you go about your transfer dealings? When you lose a player, you need to improve. You go out and you improve it. You don't take 2 months to do it. You take 48 hours to do it. That's how it needs to be done, because it's not like Wenger doesn't have the knowledge of the player base in the Premier League, in the French League, you know, the German League. He has contacts everywhere across Europe and probably in other parts of the world as well. So it's not that he doesn't know that the players aren't available, but Wenger always uses this excuse that I'll only spend money on a player if I think he improves us. And you cannot tell me that any of these players that have moved this summer to other bigger clubs could not have improved us. You mean to tell me, like seriously, that I'm going to have to pull out the list now because I'm getting slightly annoyed. You mean to tell me that Eric Bailly wouldn't have improved us at the back? That Sadio Mane wouldn't have improved us on the right side. Michy Batshuayi, he's come on for Chelsea in two substitute appearances for Chelsea for a grand total of about 40 minutes of football. He has a goal and assist. He's completely changed their attack both times he's come on as a sub. What's he going to do when he starts starting matches for Chelsea? These are chances that we could have gone out and done. Chances that are completely reasonable. Batshuayi was, what, £33 million or so? Mane was about, what, 35, 37? Bailly was 30 million. These are deals that we can afford to do. The players are absolutely there. You know, Kevin Gamarra went from Sevilla to Atletico Madrid. Like, things like that. These are all players who could have improved. Yeah, Camille Glick, you know, Umtiti, Nkulu.
I'll get erect.
All of these players are players that we could have easily afforded. And then some people use the excuse, well, we can't compete with Man City and Barca and Bayern in the transfer market. But then who are we going to compete with in the transfer market? If we have ambitions on winning the league, challenging in Europe, we have to compete with other big clubs for transfers. We can't compete with the next level down for transfers, because then we're not actually improving us. We have to go for big fish. You know, and it's not just big fish that are being put on a plate. You know, truth be told, we got Sanchez because he was in the shop window. We got Ozil because he was in the shop window. Cech was in the shop window. These are players that we went and got because we knew they were available. But sometimes you can't just wait for a club to say, you know what, we're moving on from this player, for them, you go make a deal. Go and take the money you have, this financial spending power, and go to a club and say, you can't possibly turn this down. And Chris, you know full well that if we walked up to Lyon and offered them $45 million for Lacazette, they'd say yes. And he's automatically himself also said, I'm happy to stay, but if a club comes up with an offer and I want to leave, I'll take the offer and I'll leave. He's already said that himself. Lyon aren't going to refuse that kind of money for that. Valencia are cash poor. They're absolutely broke, in the tank financially, and Tom can attest to that. So if we made a serious bid for Mustafi, we would have had him 3 weeks ago. These are things that, common sense. So that's why it's just like, and I hate to use this phrase because I see it on AFTV all the time and it drives me nuts, it's just not good enough. But the fact is, that's the only way I can sum it up. It's just, it's absolute bullshit at this point.
There's two things that I'll just add to that, and then we'll take some questions to finish up today. But the two things that, one will upset a few people. Listen, if people don't want to, people can believe what they want to believe, and they can listen to who they want to listen to. I can tell you, sat here now, as a fact, that 3.5 to 4 weeks ago, a bid of £38 million would have got Alexandre Lacazette to Arsenal. We were basically told by Lyon, if you offer that amount of money, £38 million, not euros, pounds, you can have the player, right? That's what we were told. Now, if you don't want to believe me, that's fine. If you have your own opinions on that, that's absolutely fine. That's what I was told, and the source that I got that from is not somebody that I would ever doubt. So that's what I was told, and that's what I think we could have done. And to be perfectly honest with you, that's why I'm so frustrated that we haven't done it, because I like the player a lot, and I personally think he would improve us massively on either both wings or through the middle, and I think he's a terrific talent. And at 24 years of age, he's got a huge, you know, he's got a huge sell on value, because players look at the value of players at the moment going through the roof. Sorry, my cat's trying to escape. Going through the roof at the moment, you would get sell on value even if he wasn't stunning. The other thing that I want to bring up as well, very briefly, is something that Dom said last night to me. And he was, I think he's absolutely spot on. And he said this, he said about Arsene Wenger spending money, he said that it's not so much the fact that he doesn't want to spend it, it's the fact that he doesn't want to spend it on a player that he doesn't deem worth it, right? Now, that's an argument for a rainy day. We'll leave that behind. But what Dom's point was, and I agree with him, is that Chelsea and Man United, Chelsea, Man City and Manchester United can all go out this summer and spend £150 million if they want to, and they can buy absolute garbage. And then next season, next summer, they can go and do it all again. Arsenal can't do that. They can spend 40, 50 million a summer. I agree with that. I'm not disputing that one bit. In fact, probably 60 million a summer. But we cannot risk spending 100, 150 million every summer. And these other clubs can. You know, Manchester City have gone out and bought Mangala, who's, you know, he's pulling up weeds with Yaya Toure on the training pitch now. He's nowhere near the squad. They bought Samir Nasri, who was our player of the year practically the season before. And now he can't even, like, clean up the showers. So they can afford to take those gambles, and we can't. The thing I can't argue with, as you said, Drew, is that there are players that I think have moved this summer that were no-risk purchases. And those sort of players are the ones that really, for squad depth, you said it yourself, Drew, we've lost Rosicki, Arteta, and Flamini. And okay, yeah, Arteta and Rosicki didn't play a lot of football due to injuries. They were still classed as first team squad players. They have not been replaced. That's just a fact. And promoting Jeff Rain Adelaide and bringing back Serge Gnabry is not replacing those two players. They were already on the books. And they have to be replaced.
But
so,
Chris, no one's asking him to go out and spend £150 million every single season. Exactly. We're simply asking him to buy the players that we require. We've needed a striker for 3 years. 3 years and we haven't replaced this. We haven't bought a striker. Now, how? That's for me. If he doesn't bring in an attacking player, this transfer window is undefensible. Don't put the letters after my name. I'm not an AKB or whatever. You know, but it is undefensible for him if he doesn't bring in an attacking player, because there's no way on God's green earth that we are winning anything with Giroud and up front. Or a Welbeck, who apparently is meant to be coming back, and then as soon as the transfer window's closed, he's going to have a setback. You know, it's just undefensible. And if he doesn't do it, then how can anyone in the club have faith in him? you know, like I said, don't put no letters after my name, because I'm not anything. I do think it's time for a change. Hold up no banner. But I do think that, you know, Arsene Wenger at the moment, he's trying to change the world of football all by himself. And it's not going to happen. You know, there are times now where you have to go and spend £30 million on a Bolasie. Like, of course Bolasie's not worth £30 million, but he's worth to whatever anyone's going to buy him for.
It's not just that, though. He's worth $30 million in today's market, because that's how the market has fluctuated over time with the influx of money. Players are now more expensive because everybody has money. Crystal Palace just bought Benteke for £30-plus million. That's absolutely mind-boggling to me. Crystal Palace have that much money to spend on Christian bleeping Benteke. Like, that's what it's come down to at this point. That's the issue. And when you're just saying how, and Carl said it, I said it before, we just said it again, the fact that is, no one's saying that Wenger has to go out, spend $90 million on one player, $70 million on another player, $50 million on another player, and drop $200 million transfer market. We cannot do that. But there's nothing that says that we cannot go out and spend $100 million, $120 million on three players. Combine it into one big lump sum. You bring in very good players to complete the squad. So I've refused up to this point. I'm gonna do it anyway. I'm gonna rattle off names of players that we could have gotten that we didn't. Yessi and Kulu, Camille Glick, Sidibe, Rudiger, Milik, Pjanic, Piazza, Timo Werner, Filip Kostic, Bruma, Gerhardt, Embolo, Vestergaard, Kramer, Baumgartlinger, Vollen, Bartra, who was brilliant for Dortmund in the Super Cup against Bayern Munich, Rafa Guerrero, who I know Christian would have loved, Sebastian Rudder, Ousmane Dembele, Pione Sisto, Asim Ben Yedder, you know, Isamandi, Kevin Gamero, Murata Umtiti, you know, Borja Bastan even, Ashley Williams, Batshuayi, Matip on a free from Schalke, you know, Sadio Mane, Bailey, Mkhitaryan, Nolito, Jesus Gamero.
Hal Robson-Kanu. Sorry.
No. But this is the point, though. There's so many players here that I just read off that went in this window that are Arsenal quality. They might not be world-class. They're not going to be Ozil level, Sanchez level. But the problem is there are very few people in the world that are Ozil level and Sanchez level. So you can't say that the only way you can bring in people is that these players are at that level. They're few and far between in the world of football. Not that many players in this game can really affect the game like those players can, but players can still be very, very, very good, and you bring them in. And the players I just rattled off were all players that moved for £30 million or less. So what's the excuse? And that's not even discussing the fact that there are so many players out in the market who we have a chance to go get for those decent sums of money that we haven't even moved clubs yet. So like the Mustafis of the world, you know, Lacazette, those kind of players are still available that we can get and we can afford, and you know what I mean? Like that's the point. Yes, I did just say Borja Bastan, because as Tom will tell you, he's not good enough to start for Arsenal, but he would be a very, very decent backup for Giroud, because if we're not gonna go out and buy someone who is better than Giroud, then Giroud definitely needs decent backup, which we don't have, because it sure as fuck isn't Danny Welbeck or Alexis Sanchez in the middle or Theo Walcott, and it sure as hell isn't Yaya Sanogo. So while we might not be able to bring in players if you know that might be better, bring in players that are at least halfway decent that can complete the squad, give us better depth, especially in positions where we lack depth, and that absolutely is a center forward.
Mm. Preach, brother Drew, preach. It's almost like it's almost like you were just emptying the soul there. It's good. It's good therapy, this, isn't it?
Just one point as well, and I was speaking to Tom about this. That we, like you said, Valencia from are cash poor. They need money. For me, I would go and get Mustafi, and I'd go and get Gaia as well. I know I love him. I do.
Yeah.
But I'd go and get him, and then obviously you can go and sell Gibbs. But because they need money, I guarantee if you said, oh, hello, Valencia, here's 40 million for Gaia and Mustafi. Do you think they wouldn't sell, or 45 million? They would. They blatantly.
I think they'd sell. It'd be a little bit more, because Gaia is on track to be one of the best left backs in world football. So honestly, at least the best left attacking left backs in world football. So they would need a little bit more. But still, it's something we'd afford. If we offered them 65 million for the pair, they'd take it in a heartbeat, because they can't afford not to, because they're broke. And that's the point. We're just being negligent about how we target things. Sorry to cut in. I didn't really mean to cut you off there, but I'm wound up. It drives me absolutely fucking bonkers.
We could. So. I wonder what Nicholas Bentner's doing. Last time I heard, he was partying with Danny Simpson in the summer. as we get, or Shamak. We could just add a Bayul. We could just reunite the class of 2007 or 2008, couldn't we? Yeah, let's not do that. Let's really not do that. There's names all over the place, isn't there? Somebody tweeted me. Who tweeted me yesterday? I think Carl or Drew, you time chimed on it about Alassane Player. I think it was a bit of a tongue-in-cheek comment about just signing from Nice and turning him into Henri's. He scored again tonight. How ironic. But we'll take some questions and then we'll wrap up for today, because we've covered a lot of ground for a nil-nil. We haven't got some stuff out of today. So let's have a look at some questions. Carl, I'm going to let you take on the role of John, but less beardy. Do you want to fire a couple of questions you've got from us in the chat box there?
No worries. I will ask this of you, actually, Chris. Are we leaving it too late for clubs to get replacements for players that we want? And that's from Benny.
It's a tough one, Benny. I mean, yes, in theory, we probably are. We certainly are if we've got any. If we're still keen on Lacazette, for example, which I'm led to believe we're still weighing up options. Unfortunately, the fact he scored 5 and 2 is going to make his price even higher. So I don't see that happening now, sadly. But yeah, we are. Because clubs have to replace, as you say. The one thing I would say that's in our favour is the fact that we do have a lot of money. We are still the biggest club in London. London is still one of the most fashionable cities in the world for a player to come to. So I do think that we can get deals done regardless of who we're dealing with, but we have to actually get the deals done. So yeah, we're not making it easier on ourselves, let's put it that way.
Okay. Question from Liam, and this is to Drew. Why does Arsene always seem to hold on to players that he thinks of signing to a high standard to the Gough? Walcott, Sanogo, etc.
It's tough to say with any authority, but for me personally, I feel like it's almost Wenger he's such a prideful person, and while that can be credible in certain scenarios, in this scenario, I think it's one of those things where he doesn't want to bite the bullet and say something has failed. You know, you'd be hard-pressed to find a person in Arsenal's support that would say that the Walcott project has been a success. And bar that one fantastic season he had, he's only really been decent and good some of the time, and that's he hangs on too much because he becomes close to them on a level of where everyone's always said that, you know, I see Arsene Wenger as a father, you know, in a very friendly light, and he becomes emotionally attached to players as well. So maybe he doesn't want to hurt their feelings by letting them go, or he just refuses to admit defeat in a project because of his pride. Whether it be, he absolutely does. If this was a different club, and you can rattle off a lot of other bigger clubs where if they bring in a player, if they don't perform within 2-3 years, they're out the door. Even if they have to take the financial hit, they're out the door, because it's about improving the team and competing for trophies and moving forward. It's not about, you know, oh, well, maybe this year, maybe next year, you know, here's some positives from last year, let's try to build on that this year again for the 16th year in a row. That doesn't win you trophies. It doesn't make you a more powerful footballing institution. We're not ruthless enough in that regard. We're not ruthless in the transfer market. Yes, but we're also not ruthless enough in about how we operate with the squad. If a player isn't performing for a couple of years, why keep them? Sell them, take the financial hit, which you can, in fact, we can deal with, and move on and get a better player, and that can then improve the team. So,
Agreed.
Do you think he's too loyal? Sorry, Chris, asking the question. Do you think he's too loyal to players? And I know we could talk about Diaby and people like that, but do you think sometimes he's not as ruthless as any other manager?
Yeah, I do. It's weird, isn't it? Because I think he went through that spell where he relied on the young players for years, and there was the famous quote of, you know, I don't want to kill Danielson, wasn't it? I think he said at the time. So I think he was too loyal to the younger players. Then he went through a spell of going, well, I just don't care. You know, I'll sign whoever I want. I don't care about loyalty. A bit of a ruthless streak. And now he appears to have gone back to, no, I've got to give players a chance. But the weird thing is he seems to be giving players a chance that, or standing by players that he clearly doesn't like. Joel Campbell's a case in point. Whenever he was brought up last season, where they said, you know, oh, Joel Campbell's not in the side today, and, you know, how do you feel about it? And he's like, oh, he's impressed me, he's in on merit. And the very first chance he gets, he bins him. So I think that one of the biggest things with Arsene, that I think a lot of people don't always think about, especially when tweeting, is that he's a very, very intelligent man. and he's a very, very good troll. He knows how to say things. I honestly think sometimes he'll say things just to wind people up. You know, I really do. The comments last night is a prime example. So I think sometimes you have to just sort of step back and go, what Arsene Wenger is saying is not maybe necessarily what he actually thinks, but it's what he wants people to be talking about while he does what he does. So, you know, whether you agree with it or not, you know, I don't think Arsene is 100% true on what he actually says in the media. So he is too loyal in some circumstances. He's certainly been too loyal with some of the injury-prone players. But then, you know, it's tough, isn't it? You know, I'm a manager myself, and it is hard to let go of people that you really like and that you've put your faith in, because of basically to jettison them for a chance at signing somebody else who you don't really know from Adam. So I get it, but yeah, maybe there is a bit too much loyalty there. Can I ask you this one, Carl, actually, just quickly? From Brendan O'Donoghue, out of all the clubs in England out of all the clubs in England, would the failings in the transfer market happen to them like it does to us, i.e. filling gaps in the squad?
By top clubs, I'd take it the top five. So us, Liverpool, Man United, Chelsea, Man City. No, because Man City would just throw money at it. So I can't see that happening. And I don't think their manager would allow that to happen. Man United were the same. I think they would just throw money at what they need. And I don't think Mourinho... I could never see Mourinho sort of going into the season with the problems that we have. It would never happen. Like, going into the season, with the first game of the season, no fit senior centre-back and no fit senior striker. There's not a manager, personally, in the top clubs that I think that would happen to. Liverpool, again, they're just a stupid club that just... They just go to Southampton and just see, who was your best player last season? Yeah, we'll take him. So that, and Chelsea, again, they're crying out for a centre back as well, and I think they're in negotiations with I can't remember who they're trying to buy. But at the end of the day, they know that there's a problem there, and they're trying to do something about it. For me, it's not just this season. It's happened for the last, what, 5-6 seasons. I think Danny made an extremely good point in the pod, in the podcast on Thursday, where he said only for the last, 4 or 5 seasons, we've bought someone who's ready for the first team squad. And I think that was absolutely brilliant. I mean, last season, the summer, it was a debacle. We know that only by one... we did buy no outfielder, and I think that was a problem. But it, to me, it goes back to we had never replaced. I would go back to say all was Henri. Have we replaced Henri? And then if you want to come forward a bit, we've never replaced Van Persie. I remember when we bought Giroud that season, we sold Van Persie, and he said, I'm not buying him to replace Van Persie. I'm buying him to play with. I'll never forget that quote. Never, never, never will I forget that quote. And we sold Van Persie. We never replaced him. And for me, if this happens 5 years in a row almost, that's inexcusable. It is. And for another top club, it would never happen to them. It just would not happen.
I agree. I must admit, I having, again, only highlights and brief bits and bobs I've seen, but I like the look of this Gabriel Barbosa, Brazilian lad. I wonder if he might be worth a little dabble. Right, two more quick ones, and then we really must be off, because Danny will come over and beat me with my headset if we don't. Drew, one for you that Jansib asked about, Carlos Bacca. Obviously linked with West Ham earlier on in the window, wants Champions League football. Milan. good signing for a short-term replacement. I wouldn't be against it. I mean, the one thing Bacca is a goal scorer.
Well, I think it's what we need, you know, and that's how his mind is wired when it comes to, you know, being on the pitch. He wants to score goals. He's hungry to score goals. He's direct in that regard. He has experience. He was excellent at Sevilla. You know, he's won things with them. You know, he moved on to Milan, and Milan might be in a bit of a shitter, but Milan historically is still quite a big club, and they still can attract top talent. You know, he went there. He did well last season for them, for sure. You know, John can speak more about that. But I would take him. As you say, he's nearly 30 now, so it'd be a shorter-term option. But I can guarantee you, if that was a move we did do, I think Bach would come in and be automatically – he'd compete for that starting role over Giroud. And even if he didn't, that'd be a fantastic, you know, second option off the bench, you know, or when Giroud needs to rest. If they rotate, he's still a good finisher. And I think that's all what you really need. So if we're not going to go out and try to get someone who's better than Giroud, then, again, you have to bring in someone who can give us that depth that we need, allow us to rotate to help to avoid injuries, someone who fits the system, you know, someone who wants to score goals centrally, you know, someone who is ideally from that position, not playing Walker or Sanchez there, for example. So.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if that's something that they might look at. And I see for all those people that are interested in Julian Draxler, he started and is playing for Wolfsburg tonight. So make of that what you will. He's certainly not being rested. And in their Deutsche Pokal, isn't it?
It is. Bundesliga starts
next week, isn't it? Yeah, so yeah, I wouldn't buy into that one too much. Okay, final question I'm going to ask to you two both, and it's from me, and it's simply this. Carl, for you, a number, how many signings do you expect or do you think will happen? I know you said none, I know, but we've got, about a week and 4 days. If we were going to sign any, how many in numbers do you think we get in?
I think if we were going to sign someone, it would be one, and I think it would only be a defender.
Interesting. Andrew, the same question to you?
I think it's only going to be one. I think it's only going to end up being a defender because Wenger isn't going to be getting the high-valued center-forward targets that, you know, he's targeting at the moment. So that's it for me.
Okay. The scenes when Robert Lewandowski turns up in a Mini and we send Sonogo over to Bayern Munich in a jet. Yeah. the scenes. For the record, I personally think, I still think we'll get two. But I am, of course, as everyone knows, the eternal misled optimist. But I still think a centre-half and a forward or wide forward of some description. Will it be the names people want? Probably not. But then, you know, everybody wants what they can't have, don't they? So, hey-ho. Right, we'll leave it there then, gentlemen. That's good. We went 15 minutes longer than we should have done, so my apologies. But, give people more, that's what they say. So, we'll be back. I don't even know who we're playing next. Who are we playing next? Isn't it Watford? I think it's Watford. Frantically looking at the fixtures. Somebody help me out here. Terrible feeling this is. It is Watford, yes, next Saturday at 3:00. So we'll be back for that. And then we've got an international break. How exciting. International football, great. But we'll be back for Watford. There's rumours that the Welsh might even drag himself on here because he's been missing in action the last few weeks. So hopefully we'll have him back. And I'm sure we'll have somebody else on the crew as well. Mr. Davies has said he's going to pop on at some point this season, so I might see if he's free as well. So there we go. But my thanks to Carl and to Drew for joining me this evening. Much appreciate your time, gentlemen.
No worries, pleasure.
Anytime.
And you, of course, will be back in one form or fashion throughout the season, and no doubt we'll be bitching and moaning like usual. But thank you very much to everyone that's tuned in today. My thanks to Gimli and Daddy for giving me the hosting duties of this wonderful show. As always, we have been ABW Radio, the originals, still the best. We'll be back with you after Watford. Keep it Arsenal, and we'll speak to you on the podcast on Thursday. Ciao, ciao.
Bye.
excited. I'm a fire starter, twisted fire starter. We'll be right back.